Hello, everybody. I'm Alicia Swami. I'm here with my co-host Keely Severson, Eric Johnson. We are Exposing Mold. Today, we are going to talk about moldy celebrities, and specifically celebrities that have been dealing with mold recently and have been in the headlines. For example, Tori Spelling and her family have been having major mold problems that they now live in an RV near the ocean in Ventura County. Eric, what are your thoughts on this situation? It's really peculiar because we usually see people who are mold sick go from another house or sort of do the conventional thing. And here we see a celebrity doing something that's unconventional. Here we see a celebrity doing what us people who avoid mold do. It sounded like her mom was going to give her a rental, but Tori was so afraid to take this rental because she wasn't unsure how safe it was for her and her family. Does it sound like she is, maybe her and her family are hypersensitive mold people, mold reactors, I guess, is what we like to say?
Well, one of the clues is that when she went shopping for another place to live, she refused to sign for anything more than a one-month lease. And that's pretty classic of somebody who's afraid they may not be able to tolerate a new environment.
Yeah, and that's interesting because I don't think I've ever heard a story in the news be so in depth. I feel like the news is like waiting for every progression for what's going on with Tori. It's like today something's happening, tomorrow she's divorced with her husband, now they're living in an RV. I'm watching all these comments online and I'm just so surprised of how people are really treating her situation. And it really speaks to sort of what we go through in our own personal lives with people around us, thinking that, oh, we're crazy. Oh, we're doing these ridiculous things. And it's like, well, we're doing these things to actually survive and doing it for our health.
I can't imagine having to go through what we go through with everyone watching and trash talking you and writing awful articles about you to make it sound like you're staging this for attention or you're too snotty to take a house from your mom. Like, no, you have to be so careful with your environment. And this is such a painful thing to endure even privately. Like, it's awful.
Yeah, the comments are more telling than the actual news stories, because the way people are responding to this, so much criticism, people are ripping her up, very little speculation that maybe what she's saying is factual and that she's really suffering from mold the way she claims she is, and that she has good reasons for what she's doing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They're like mocking her for everything else and then like publicizing it because she's a celebrity, and there's no conversation of like, why the heck would someone have to be in a month-to-month rental? Or why would someone take the extreme of traveling in it or being in an RV instead of a rental? Like, where's that conversation? I feel like it's just kind of hidden underneath all of the, like, the gossip about her, which I think is so trashy.
Yeah, well, she hasn't specifically described hyperreactivity, so I hate to overstep and speculate, project our experience on somebody else without more data. But she's certainly going through all the signs, all the motions of doing what hypersensitized people do.
Yeah, I mean, people are totally just skirting over the fact of toxic mold, and that toxic mold is actually reason for this, because, you know, we've seen it in the articles. And it just goes to show you that even though there's so many influencers online, there's so many sick people online talking about mold illness and they're recovering and they're moving to Florida and they're doing all these smoothies and whatever crap they're doing online to get better from mold, mold awareness still hasn't been achieved.
Now, that's a really interesting thing, because people in mold groups are talking about how wonderful it is that mold awareness is being raised, when you see that raising awareness didn't exactly result in the desired outcome. It was more ridicule, mocking. It didn't get top researchers to look into it. You raise awareness because you hope that people respond in a reasonable, scientific, interested sort of way. And that's not what we're seeing at all.
I mean, look at the Brittany Murphy case. I mean, that was huge. And it took so long to finally come around for people to think that, okay, well, maybe she died, her and her husband died because of mold exposure in that home. And it's still brushed off as something not important.
That was an interesting point of demarcation for how people perceived mold, because I was in the Yahoo Sick Buildings mold group at the time that story first broke. And up until then, whenever anybody got sick in unusual circumstances in a building, people didn't really leap to project mold on it. And Brittany Murphy was the first time when everybody said, oh, well, that's got to be mold. Britney Spears got sick in the same, she owned that house before Brittany Murphy. And it's got all the signs of that building having an effect on somebody. And that's when the speculation really took off like a rocket for all these unusual occurrences. So there is a certain amount of raising awareness that has an effect, but at the same time, it's interesting that it didn't result in top researchers taking interest. And that was the whole point of raising awareness.
I mean, look at John F. Kennedy. He's now running for president. I was able to unearth Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Sorry. Great guy. I think he's awesome. But that article where his wife killed herself in their extremely moldy mansion that they were trying to renovate.
They were renovating their mansion at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They took an old dilapidated mansion. They were going to turn it into a green, environmentally healthy building.
Yeah. And his wife had committed suicide in this location I think the article said on the property, and then 5 months later, he ended up getting rid of it. And I find it interesting that in his campaigns, he's not really talking about mold. He does talk about like chemicals and stuff, but
he's talking about chronic health and saying, if I don't dramatically improve the health of the children in this population, I don't want you to reelect me for a second term. So he's the first candidate.
But in terms of his ex-wife, yeah, they said that she had all kinds of mental problems and split up. So she was kind of on her own in that building when she committed suicide. But that, again, bears the hallmarks of somebody being affected in the sick building, not knowing what it was. And everybody blames the person rather than the chemical exposure.
I do wonder that about Britney Spears, having lived in that house right before Britney Murphy, because Nico wonders too, he said. You know, because they publicized her in the media as crazy right before she left that house. And you just kind of wonder, was the mold affecting, was there mold there at that time? Was it affecting her? Was it making her act erratic? Did she know she had to get out of the house because it wasn't healthy? Because after Brittany Murphy and her husband both passed away in that, didn't that house eventually get torn down?
Yeah, it was bulldozed. But in terms of Britney Spears, yeah, that was brought up. Well, maybe the house was making her act crazy, but that head shaving incident where she totally lost her cookies, that happened, I think, a couple years after she moved out of that house. So the connection didn't appear to be direct, but we know from experience that once somebody's primed for mold, they never really truly recover 100%.
Well, I think Britney Spears is getting a divorce now, and a lot of people speculate about her behavior on social media as being quite odd. So I don't know. Maybe she's in a way still affected. Again, it's all speculation, right?
But there again, if we don't have good information, direct statements from the person who's going through this, whenever we overstep our bounds by trying to impress our experience on somebody else, that gives our opposition more fuel to criticize us and find flaws in our reasoning.
All right. So there is a direct case, Dustin Diamond, right? From that famous TV show that we all loved when we were younger. He actually said in an article that he thought that his stage 4 lung cancer diagnosis, and that eventually took his life, was because of, he said asbestos and mold exposure from hotel rooms. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, but as far as the behavioral aspect, we really need to hear direct descriptions of what somebody was experiencing in the exposure before we can present it and go, this is something you really need to look into. Because as we've seen with celebrities of the past, if you don't really have hardcore confirmation, it actually has the opposite effect of what we want. It creates more speculation, more confusion, and more debate without leading to any top researchers going, okay, there's enough meat here that I can analyze it.
But that's the problem, right? With mold, it's like, it's not an overwhelmingly symptom of like one thing. It's like, when you're exposed, it can do different things in different people. And do you think it's because we don't have like this overwhelming evidence of like one certain symptom, one certain diagnosis, that it's harder to pinpoint mold as cause for these issues?
Yeah, that was really brought out at the 2019 Fort Lauderdale, Florida Mold Congress, when Dr. Qin Yang was talking about sort of a hidden aspect of what mold can do, and that's immune suppression without the overt neuroinflammatory effects. So when you have a loss of cell regeneration, when you don't have mitosis going on, the cells are not reproducing themselves, they're not dividing and creating new cells because of the protein synthesis inhibition of the dolabellines and the atrenomes, then you literally have a body that cannot repair itself without any warning of headaches and rashes and the inflammation that we normally associate with toxic mold. So it's very possible that people can have a low-level immune compromised situation and be completely unaware that they're falling apart. They don't know the reason for it. All they know is they are falling apart. And because doctors are looking for symptoms, they want to hear you complain about headaches or something before they act on it. They don't make the connection. So Dr. Yang brought this out, that they think now that many of the cases where they thought Stachybotrys was harmless, it was because it was the variant, the evil twin chlorohalonata, which was turning off immune function, and doctors were unable to detect it because of their mindset that this was only be accompanied by headaches and severe fatigue.
So in a way, I know this is always an excuse, right? It's always like, okay, you're different. Everyone's different. But in a way, it's like, yeah, everyone's different. So speaking to what you always say, whatever you have, it gets worse in mold exposure.
Well, when it comes to protein synthesis inhibition, where these particular toxins just shut down cellular functions in vitro, in a test tube, then it not everybody's, you know, different. That doesn't work. This is a direct toxic effect that is just like cyclosporin shutting down immune response. When they use the cyclosporin drugs to prevent transplant rejection, you never hear anybody say, well, everybody's different. It may work for somebody, but no, it works on everybody. And these particular toxins from trichothecines and the atrenones, they have a cellular effect that is the same on everybody.
So what we know is that it's shutting off immune systems to those who are being exposed to it, but how that expresses itself down the line in terms of symptoms, diseases, illnesses, that part is different. That shows up as different.
Sure. Just like chemically induced AIDS. When AIDS popped up, the HIV virus shut down immune function at such a fundamental level that how it presented itself was many different ways. Kaposi sarcoma, molluscum contagiosum, various candida infections, a lot of different ways. And yet, to examine it, you had to see the pattern that these homosexual men that acquired this peculiar infection were all falling apart in a strange and new, unexpected way. And that's essentially what we're seeing with toxic mold exposure. is that people are falling apart. And the common denominator is that they're all exposed to the same thing or in the same building.
You know, we recently had a conversation with a doctor who practices CIRS and, you know, diagnoses his patients as such. And it seems like they're so hard pressed to find a genetic component. Why do you think that they focus on the genetic component and not the immune suppression portion of the illness and teaching their patients to first and foremost avoid instead of having that come later when the patient is continually relapsing?
Well, that's a peculiar quirk of how doctors think. They've got a sort of a bizarre mentality. The way that they approach things is due to their conceptual framework, their training. You know, they're taught to look at the situation. And if that everybody doesn't get sick in a building, they go, well, then you must be different. So that means we have to find out what's wrong with you. And they don't really think about, well, if the mold colony is in one corner of a building and your office is in that corner, that might make a difference. Or if everybody gets sick and it's all in a single room, let's look at the room. That's not top of their list. They think for some reason that mold disperses evenly throughout a building and affects everybody all the same. So their first thought is not to examine the environment, it's to blame the patient. And we certainly saw that with the first celebrity to become notorious for toxic mold, Johnny Carson's sidekick, Ed McMahon, where he got an article in the paper saying, death mold is killing my dog. Well, now, wait a minute. The moment you hear that Ed McMahon and his dog are both sick, you could safely conclude that it wasn't any kind of a human leukocyte antigen or any genetic problem that they both shared in common. And yet, doctors persist anyway. They just don't give up. They want to find something wrong so badly in the person and pin it on them that they completely ignore environmental clues. And we've seen that in virtually every cluster of illness that they examine.
I don't have any more questions or follow-up if you guys want to keep going.
Well, just as I've always said, from the beginning of the chronic fatigue syndrome, the publication of the definition, the real problem here is not that the mystery is so confusing, it's that doctors make it so confusing. And to understand why this is such a bizarre, complex, confusing thing for doctors, we need to study doctors. What is in their heads? How is it possible that they can see a building full of sick people and blame each and every patient without thinking to look at the building? There were times when I was in the support group and a patient would say, well, the doctor told me he's never seen anything like this before. And the person next to him would, but wait, you go to Dr. So-and-so and he's my doctor. And he told me the same thing. And we'd find out that the doctor is telling each and every one of them that he's never seen anything like it before. And he couldn't put it together that they're all teachers, all working in the same building? This is astonishing. So this isn't a problem of the mystery being so confusing. It's how doctors look at it that makes them so confused. And I think it's really important to look back on these incidents like Brittany Murphy and Simon Wonjak and Ed McMahon and Aaron Brockovich and the Southwest Airlines reservation terminal back in 1998, which made it into Newsweek magazine, and examine how doctors approach this problem. Because you see, it's really not that confusing. It's that doctors are so programmed to blame the patient, to do precision medicine, find out what's wrong in the individual, they are capable of overlooking the most obvious sick building incidents in plain sight.
I feel like that point was highlighted so well this week when we had an interview with a doctor who even flat out said, every time I've consulted with Dr. Shoemaker has always pointed me back to the building if I had a case that I couldn't figure out. But then they were still trying to find new HLA activations to explain the illness. And it's like, do you not see the hypocrisy of what you are saying right now? It just, they're so smart, it goes right over their head.
That's exactly why I tried to act peacemaker and say, okay, let's back off. Because you could see that he's really programmed to behave this way and he can't break out of his training.
Yeah, you were diplomatic. You saved that interview, really. But yeah. And so smart, they're dumb.
You can see that at Stanford, too. Because I've been down there talking to top researchers, and I described the sick buildings and how there's clusters of illness, and people that were closest to the colonies got the sickest. And they go, well, you have no proof. I'm going, I don't need any. It's obvious. It's just like Semmelweis with the hand washing. If people aren't dying after washing their hands with this bleach, it's obvious. We don't need any more information than what we've got. They go, no, you have nothing in the literature. You have no proof. And I'm forced to say, you know, if you were to go back in time and Semmelweis presented his thesis to you, you would strike it down. You would argue with him. You wouldn't be one of the good doctors who unveils this. You're one of the bad doctors who fights like crazy to suppress it.
The way doctors are portrayed on TV and the way doctors act in real life are not the same thing. But people have it in their heads that doctors are going to do everything and move heaven and earth to find the root cause of their illness. But in reality, doctors are like, no, we don't test for that weird stuff. No, that doesn't do that.
And it doesn't seem to matter, like, your economic status. The doctors are screwing over us as much as they're screwing over the people with money and celebrities. I mean, we saw with our interview with Ryan Sutter talking about how he worked with Jill Carnahan, who is a person who understands mold.
No, she doesn't.
Well, I mean, compared to a regular doctor, she knows more than a regular doctor, and she still screwed him over big time. So it's
Look at Jill Carnahan's behavior. Even after her own experience, after all the time she's seen how toxic mold affects people, she still reverts back into this blame the patient mentality where it's crucial to decrease your fight or flight emotional response, your fear of being re-exposed.
Doctors are perpetuating this giant lie that this residual emotional expression that people might have after getting sick is somehow something that needs to be silenced. Like, and they're not even asking themselves if they're wrong. That's what I don't understand. As someone who studied philosophy in college, like, the way that people think, it doesn't make any sense. How can you never even pause to ask yourself the question of, could I be mistaken here? How can you just, like, dive headfirst into defending this position when there are people literally saying, I use my emotional reactions to guide me away from contamination, but to just double down on this.
Yeah. And then continually reaching out for more genetic explanations to the detriment of looking at the environmental factors, the potential toxicity of Stachybotrys in particular, which has demonstrated itself over and over again to be fully capable of lowering immune response in the healthiest of people. So you don't really need to fall back on their emotional state or their genetic flaws or whether they smoke or drink or do drugs. Stachybotrys can do this all on its own. It doesn't need any help.
But I don't understand why doctors in real life find it impossible to learn from their patients. Like, why is there this idea of a doctor that we don't find in reality, of a doctor who's like learning from their patients, investigating their patient's life to find like a hidden cause? That doesn't translate from our idea of what a doctor is and what we see on Grey's Anatomy to actual life practice. Because Eric, this is something that you taught Alicia and I, this idea of academic insanity, where these doctors, they're so smart that you can't actually tell them anything without evidence, which means that if a doctor has to have a peer-reviewed journal to believe something, they can never, ever, ever, ever under any circumstance learn directly from their patient base. And I thought that that's what medical practice was, learning from your patient base, learning how to treat whatever your specialty is and doing it better and actually helping. So if that's not what medicine is, what is medicine? Because it seems like a way to just shut people up and let them live in chronic health and not ever find the root cause. Like, you know, it's just a business model. Sell them a pill and keep them sick and don't tell them the truth about their health, because then you lost a customer.
And what's really astonishing is you can explain this academic insanity to them, this dysfunctional mindset where they're completely incapable of detecting something that's environmental due to their focus on the patient. And they swear up and down they're not like that. And then they proceed to do it anyway.
I'm not saying that this is a good thing that's happening these days, but it seems like the patients are getting fed up with what has been going on for a long time. And you're starting to see violence against physicians and healthcare workers increase. I think I sent you guys that article from PBS the other day showing that people are getting pissed off that their doctors are failing them, that they're doing these outrageous things. But I feel like I'm sort of scared for these doctors these days, because it's like, you're either going to change or you're going to suffer the consequences, because there's a lot of sick people that are tired of being sick that want answers. And they're getting to the point where they're doing some very violent things.
Well, without resorting to violence, I mean, I'm certainly not in favor of beating the heck out of doctors, even though sometimes they may act that way. We can look at the One Name campaign as a splendid example of the shift in attitude that's taking place here, because the Solve Me and various ME/CFS institutes propose this idea of combining everything into one giant trash can under a new brand, a new name. And it sounds, on the face of it, like this is logical. It makes sense. Yeah, we're sick in a bunch of different ways. So if we can all get on the same page and work together, that would be just terrific. That sounds great. But in reality, that's not how doctors think. And it doesn't lead to anything. And doctors are finally, or patients are finally seeing through the fact that this just leads to a larger trash can and no diagnosis and no help for them. And they rebelled against that construct. And in the presentation, when the One Name campaign unveiled itself, they put forth a doctor who is absolutely classic for making all the mistakes that we're trying to avoid. This guy says, well, I ignore all the names. They're just labels. Chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, ME. It all means the same thing. They're all symptoms. So I dig deeper. Well, by doing this, he's not digging deeper to learn any of the evidence from any of these individual names. And he's just repeating the mistakes of the past by wiping out everything that came before with a one new useless name. And this is the problem with Dr. Shoemaker and SIRS. He started out really good. It's in fantastic clues, and it looked like it's going to lead to resolution of some very specific things. The people getting sick on the Chesapeake with the Fisteria. Okay, we've got an environmental problem. We've got people getting sick in this specific location. We can put the two together and make plans about what to do about it. Maybe evacuate if you have to, or study particular toxins and find out exactly what's going on in that patient subset. But that's not what happened. Instead, his biotoxin illness concept led to a larger and larger trash can, which doesn't really apply to everybody, and deprives them of the ability to make informed choices about their particular situation, such as being in a sick building with Stachybotrys.
That was a really nice summary of everything wrong with the One Name campaign and also the CRS, IRS term.
I certainly have no use for that. And the funny thing is, chronic fatigue syndrome started out as a very narrow, very specific. It was clusters of sick teachers in sick buildings and some sick people in a casino, which turned out to be a sick building too. So it's very specific. It was very easy to solve. And look what they did with chronic fatigue syndrome. Well, that's just a name. That's just a label. That's just fatigue. Everybody's got fatigue. And they turned something simple and easy and solvable in a matter of minutes into 35 years of confusion that's been weaponized to create more harm and confusion to millions of patients the world over. And that's not because the mystery itself was difficult. It's because of the way doctors behave.
All right. You want me to end it there?
Sure.
Keely?
Yeah, that's all a right. Good end.
That was a great conversation, great segues, great information as usual. And I hope you guys, whoever's listening out there, just really think about what we talk about and what we say, because this is affecting all of us. So it's really important. Anyways, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks again.
We want to thank you for listening. Just sending a friendly reminder that what we say is not intended as medical advice. but information to expand your thinking surrounding common situations and issues within the mold community. If you like what we do, please support us by making a donation in the link in our show notes. We also provide one-on-one consultations, products to help with symptom management that you can find in our shop, and a private membership group filled with a supportive community of peers working together to heal from toxic mold. As a friendly reminder, Exposing Mold is a 501c3 nonprofit, and every donation is tax deductible. Thank you so much for your support, and we look forward to providing you with the most honest information out there on mold and mold issues. Please visit exposingmold.org for more information.